You're listening to It's All About Food. And this is a program where I talk about food. It's obvious, isn't it? It's all about food. And I really love to talk about food and connect the dots with so many other things that we experience in our lives, because I really believe it's all about food. It's all connected. So many things are connected. And I like to connect the dots deliciously. I'm in the Bay Area. I'll be here for 6 weeks. I've been here for a week now. Time flies. Time flies when you're having fun and when you're not having fun. Time just moves on. And it's always fun to be in a different place. The Bay Area is very familiar to me. We spend almost half the year here doing theater projects. And my partner Gary and I are here directing Into the Woods in San Jose, California. Now, I had put myself on this kind of self-imposed crazy eating thing before I left New York, where I was working on clearing out the pantry, the refrigerator, the freezer, just so there wouldn't be any waste. I like to do that, whether I'm staying at home or going on a trip. I think it's important to be aware of the food that we have and eat it. So often people buy things, especially fresh produce, but sometimes you may want to try something new, you buy it, and then it lingers and it lingers and it lingers. Food is meant to be eaten. Food is meant to be eaten as fresh as possible. Keep that in mind when you're opening the refrigerator or freezer and look around. How long has this been here? How long has this been here? Anyway, I cleared everything out. It was really fun. And now I'm in San Jose, and my partner Gary, he's been here for a while. He got here 3 weeks before me. So it was really fun when I got to the place we were staying at, and the refrigerator was full of all my favorites. It's kind of like seeing your old friends. And plus, I had already done a Vitacost order that I had sent to him to have some things in advance. Have I told you about Vitacost? There are a number of different online stores that offer food. And I'm a regular user of Vitacost, where I get whole grains like organic quinoa, organic millet, organic buckwheat, organic rices, organic nuts and seeds, organic raw cacao nibs, organic Ticino, which is a caffeine-free coffee-like beverage, and perhaps some other things that are not coming to mind right now, but I get my dry goods, my staples there. Is it an ideal thing to do? I'm not going to say that. I have things that I like about ordering online and other things that I don't like. The thing that drives me nutty is the waste. There's so much packaging involved. And some of these companies, like Vitacost, try and listen to their customers and their concerns, so the packaging that they use is more biodegradable. But there's still so much of it. And rather than growing food ourselves, I'm not sure what the ideal thing is to do. But right now, I take advantage of Vitacost. And I did so and sent some stuff to Gary. So we had some of our staples here. The fun thing is to visit all of our favorite restaurants that are here that we haven't seen in a while. It's also like seeing some old friends. And actually, there are some old friends there. What I want to do is talk about the Vegetarian House in San Jose. You may remember my first interview this year, early in January, was with Sonny Muller, who is the manager of the Vegetarian House. What a kind, good, loving, generous person he is. I can't give him enough positive adjectives. Well, we went to the vegetarian house this week, and the menu's been updated. So restaurants, from time to time, the good ones anyway, will review their restaurant options. They'll review the budget, the costs, what customers are buying, what they aren't buying, what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. And the people at the vegetarian house are really smart in many ways. They're not just there to make a profit. They really care about the mission, which is offering healthy, delicious plant foods for people's health, for the health of the planet, and certainly for reducing cruelty to animals. It's very clear. And all of the servers, the staff at the vegetarian house, they're all on board with this mission. You walk into this space and you just feel the love. And I'm serious. I call it my home away from home because I really feel at peace in this place and I feel how genuine it is. Okay, so we looked at the new menu and I kind of panicked first, like, oh my God, this is a new menu. Are all my favorite things there? Fortunately, all my favorite things are there. I think they dropped a number of items and then they added some new specials. So this was a separate menu with a few specials, and two of them had lion's mane mushrooms in them. Now, have you ever been to a restaurant that served lion's mane mushrooms? Anybody? I've never seen lion's mane mushrooms on a menu. And if you have, please let me know because I'd like to check it out. Mushrooms are very healthy. And there's a lot of research going on to study the individual mushrooms because there are so many. And they all have unique properties. Chinese medicine for a long time has been using mushroom extracts and mushrooms in many ways, believing that they have many health benefits. And now, modern day Western pharmaceutical companies are getting interested because there are some amazing benefits. I used to call mushrooms natural chemotherapy. They have a lot of anti-cancer fighting properties, immune system boosting properties. Some might say, is there one ideal mushroom? And the answer is, I don't know. But the answer really is, just like us, we're all unique. And mushrooms are unique, and they all seem to have beneficial properties, but some may be better for some things than others. And that's what makes life so delicious, variety. So you want to eat mushrooms and maybe find a mushroom supplement that works for you, especially if you're in a particular health crisis. I know that when I was going through my cancer treatment, 12 years ago now, and the research wasn't as prolific regarding mushrooms as it is today, I took a concentrated reishi mushroom supplement and a Coriolis supplement. So back to lion's mane. There's some interesting research about lion's mane, especially with regard to cognitive improvement. And that piqued my interest because I'm spending a lot more time with my mom, who has mild dementia. And some friends and colleagues of mine have been diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's. And it's a very frightening thing to lose your mind. And it's difficult for the individual and it's difficult for the people that are close to that individual. So what can we do? Now, just like so many other chronic diseases, heart disease, cancerous diabetes, the plant-based diet, the whole food plant-based diet, has remarkable benefits. Okay, so if we want to be healthy, the first thing we want to do is stop eating junk food, refined food, processed food, white flour foods, sugar. You know this, right? And if you're new to this, welcome. refined foods, processed foods, all those dried up things that come in plastic and cardboard packages in the stores and in fast food places or convenience stores. These are the foods that aren't really foods. They may have calories in them, but they're not filled with nutrients. We want to eat whole, minimally processed plant foods as fresh as possible. And mushrooms are a part of this. So reading about lion's mane mushrooms, I noticed that there are a few studies now that have shown dramatic cognitive improvement with taking lion's mane. And you've probably seen some of these articles that talk about it. The thing is, there's not a lot of research, and some of the research has been on mice, on rats, or on mice cells. This stuff is interesting to get more funding to do further studies. But there was one particular 2009 study, and it only tested 30 individuals, and 15 took, I believe it was a gram of, 250 milligrams three times a day of lion's mane, and it was a concentrated powder, and they did it for 16 weeks, and they had significant cognitive improvement compared to the control group that didn't have any. Now, this was a very, very small study. I know these things are expensive. It's really hard to do, but enough to pique my interest, and I think it's worth trying. But let's get back to the Vegetarian House, because they're serving lion's mane mushroom, and I ordered the spicy mambo, which was lion's mane with some kind of spicy breading. It was gluten-free. It was served on a bed of green salad and had red peppers in it. It was just fantastic. And the texture isn't quite like the white button mushroom or the crimini mushroom or the portobello mushroom that so many of us are familiar with. It had a chewier, crunchier almost, and in some ways a little bit like gristle, you know, the fat that you'd get when eating meat. Now, I haven't had meat in 30 years, folks, but as I remember, it was similar to that in some ways, but better. It was just phenomenal. Did I tell you I liked this stuff? It was really amazing. And I was thinking as I was eating it, like, wow, this is just so good. And it's good for me. Do I want everybody to know about this, or should I keep it a secret? Well, I want you to know about it. Now, as I was eating it, Gary was enjoying something that he liked at this restaurant called The Queen's, which they now call The Queen's Joy. And it's also a gluten-free product. It's a meat-like product made from soy, and they serve it with lots of wonderful vegetables, but it's really good. And that's been his favorite when he goes to the Vegetarian House. So he was enjoying his, and I was enjoying mine. I wasn't bothering him about, you have to try this, you have to try this. But when he was all done, I saved a piece for him, and I said, Gary, I know you don't like mushrooms. I know you don't. This is not like any other mushroom. I'm just asking you to try it. And he's a big boy. He tried it, and guess what? This boy who doesn't like mushrooms, occasionally he's okay with like a mushroom powder in a broth or something, but it's really the texture, I think, more than the flavor. He liked it. He liked it. He liked the lion's mane mushroom served at the Vegetarian House. We really enjoyed our meal. It was a lot of fun. And as we were finishing up, Sonny Mueller was there, and he came over and he sat down with us. We had a really lively, wonderful discussion. Now, I've said this before, and I'm sticking to it. The owners and managers of many vegan restaurants are very passionate about the work, about the food, and about the future of our planet. And in today's world, where there's so many crazy, awful things going on, it's just like an oasis to find a place that's showing how life can be with joy and peace and delicious food. So I asked him about the lion's mane mushroom, and he lit up because he said they had been reading about its benefits for cognitive improvement and for brain health. These are people at a restaurant who are researching about what foods are healthy. I love that. And they sourced their lion's mane mushroom from Taiwan. The chefs had been working on it for quite some time, trying to perfect their recipe to make it really delicious. And they did it. I don't know what they did, but it's amazing. If you know the way to San Jose, ba 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 ba. Ba 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 ba. Ba-dum-bum. Yeah. Anyway, if you know the way to San Jose, do you know the way to San Jose? Please find your way to the Vegetarian House and try the spicy mumbo and let me know what you think. Okay, I don't get anything for promoting this food. I just love this place and I love these people and I wish the world was filled with more restaurants like this one. Next up, I want to talk about salt. Now, you may know that I don't typically salt my food. I don't put salt in the water whenever I make my greens. I don't use salt. If we're having a party, if we're having people over, then we might salt the food very moderately, just because we know most people are accustomed to salt in their food, unfortunately. I don't believe salt is necessary to put in food. We do need a small amount of sodium in our diet, along with other electrolytes and minerals, but we don't need to get it from that white table salt, or sea salt, or Himalayan salt, or any of the high-priced salt out there. They're mostly sodium chloride. And like any white powder, we don't need to put that in our bodies. Whole foods, whole minimally processed foods, that's the ticket. Now, on the subject of salt, salt does have useful purposes, and that's what I want to talk about. So rather than putting salt on your food, here are some good things that you can do with salt. Salt is great dissolved in water and used to bathe our eyes, help us out when we have sore throats or other throat infections, and fantastic as a nasal rinse in a neti pot. So if your eyes are dry, if you have an infection like conjunctivitis, if they're feeling particularly dirty from dusty air, there's lots of reasons why you might want to rinse your eyes. Or maybe they're just tired. A salt water rinse is a lovely way to bathe your eyes. So typically, you want to use clean water, and that water needs to be boiled, because we want to get rid of any bacteria that's in the water. Now, I distill my water, and that's ideal. But if you don't have a distiller, just use as clean water as you can and boil it. Then let it cool. And you can mix the salt in the water once it's boiled. So for an eye bath or an eye wash, a half a teaspoon of salt in about a cup of water is a good ratio to use. I like to use a shot glass. I don't have an eyewash glass, but I'll put the cooled salt water in a shot glass and throw it in my eye. It's very nice. It's very cleansing and a good way to clear out any problems that you might have with your eyes, because our tears are simply salt water. So that's one good benefit of salt. Salt is also great as a gargle. Gargling with warm salt water can reduce swelling in the throat, and it can loosen up that mucus, right? It helps to flush out irritants and bacteria. And again, it's a half a teaspoon of salt in one cup of water. And I don't always boil the water this time when I'm putting it in my throat, but it's good practice to boil the water, let it cool to warm, and then gargle with that. So you put the salt in once the water is boiled, and then let it cool down to warm, and then gargle with it. It's wonderful. Salt does have its benefits. The thing that I'm really excited about, or the thing that I rely on a lot, is the neti pot, which is a type of nasal irrigation device. And for this, I use a quarter teaspoon in about a cup of water. And the key for all of these, as a saltwater rinse, as a gargle, and as a nasal rinse, you want to use salt that is free of iodine and free of any kind of additives. You just want simple sea salt, no additives. And the neti pot has really been a lifesaver. So when I feel a cold coming on, or just like now, I've been traveling, and the transition from going to different types of weather, different kinds of allergens in the air, being on a plane, sometimes I can't rinse my nose enough. And I might do it several times a day, depending on how I feel. And if I feel a tickle or something, I just clean it right out. It's magical. So these are benefits of salt. We don't need to consume salt. Salt makes a wonderful rinse. I like to put salt also sometimes in the tub. So you may be aware of these therapeutic mineral baths like the Dead Sea. There was a time a decade ago, I haven't done it in a long time, but it was really fun. I would buy these 50-pound bags of Dead Sea salt, and I would put them in my bathtub. And it was quite a luxurious thing to do. I felt like I was bathing in the Dead Sea. It wasn't as thick and dense as the Dead Sea is, if you've ever been there. It's quite buoyant because of the salt and other minerals in it. But mineral baths can be very therapeutic. You do have to be careful with a neti pot and make sure that each time you use it, you clean it afterwards. I like to rinse it with some mild soapy water and make sure it's thoroughly rinsed out afterwards. And I make sure I put a little soap right at the tip where bacteria might collect. Because if you do have a cold and you're rinsing your nasal passages, you don't want to save that bacteria and give it back to yourself once you've rinsed it out if it collects in the neti pot. So it's important to keep the neti pot clean. And then I just let it air dry. Sometimes I might just put a little boiled water in it first and rinse it out before I add my boiled water that I'm going to add the salt to. These are just little tips. And of course, you have to be really careful to make sure the temperature of the water is just lukewarm, not hot and not cold, because it's going right into your nasal passages. There's a lot of sensitive areas in there. You want the temperature to be close to your own body temperature. Now, I found sometimes if I use too much salt, if I haven't mixed it well, I can feel a little burning. So you want to be careful to have the right salt to water ratio. Maybe you want to start with a little less salt when you get used to it. I cannot tell you enough how beneficial it is. If you have any kind of breathing issues, anything, sinus issues, if you have allergies, the neti pot is an amazing lifesaver, and it's inexpensive and it's easy to do. I know some friends who are resistant to the neti pot. It's just a bizarre thing, sticking something up their nose and pouring water so that it travels and goes through the other nostril. I'm kind of fascinated by it, you know, the head bones connected to the whatever. It's kind of fun to know that the liquid can flow through one nasal passage and come out the other nostril. But if you don't do it quite right, you can get that feeling of water up your nose, literally, like when you're in a pool, for example, and it's kind of an uncomfortable feeling. So there is a way to properly do the neti pot rinse, and you want to breathe with your mouth in and out while you're doing it, and tilt your head in such a way that you can pour it in one nostril and have it come out the other. There are many tutorials on the internet on how to do this with pictures. If you haven't tried it, I really can't say enough about it. So these are great uses for salt. We don't have to put salt on our food. Salt is great for rinsing the eyes, for rinsing the throat, and for rinsing the nose. Also for the skin. What do you use salt for that isn't for food? If you have some good ideas or recommendations, let me know and I'll share it with everybody. You can email me at info@realmeals.org. info@realmeals.org. Next subject, summer. Summer barbecues, picnics, the big American holiday, Independence Day, the 4th of July. Once again, food plays a starring role. Barbecues are often meat-centered, and it doesn't have to be that way anymore. In my opinion, I think a plant-based barbecue is a lot more colorful, a lot more tasty, certainly better for us. Some of the easiest things you can do today at a barbecue are just use the plant versions of the meat that is typically put on a barbecue. Veggie burgers, veggie hot dogs. It's pretty simple. If you're feeling ambitious, you can always make your own veggie burgers. We have a number of veggie burger recipes at responsibleeatingandliving.com. My favorite is the Healthy World Burger, which is made from a whole grain blend of millet, black and red rices, and a grain called turanicum or kamut, which does have gluten in it. And if you have a gluten intolerance, you can always substitute brown rice. This is a fantastic recipe, and it also comes with a link to a great sauce for the summer, the chipotle sauce, which is amazing and is great with anything, and it makes everything sloppy and gooey and yummy. Now, I want to also direct you to a video that we created a few years ago. It's really fun, and it's called The Swinging Gourmets in Real American Barbecue. And we talk about a number of recipes, grilling vegetables, vegan pesto, our chickpea or garbanzo bean flour wraps, and then, of course, the burger. We do a lentil burger in this video. It's really fun. But in addition to all the recipes that we show you how to make in this particular video, my partner Gary DeMattei and I talk about our own personal stories, or at least Gary narrates. It's kind of a documentary food show. So if you have a moment, I recommend watching it. Let me know what you think. I just did something at my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, and I hope it is more helpful to you. I posted right on the homepage an index of all of our recipes. There are many categories, and this way, if you're looking for something specific, this might be an easier way for you to access them. And just doing it, I'm overwhelmed at all the recipes that are available right now. I did make a special summer category. It's a summer category, barbecue, 4th of July, all those things kind of fit in the same place. And some of my favorites are right there. So I just wanted to mention some to you in case you're thinking, what am I going to bring to this potluck, this picnic, this barbecue? One of the newer ones is the potato black bean salad. You've heard me talk about this before. It came together at the last minute. I used ingredients that I had just around. We were traveling. It was all we had. We were invited to a potluck, and I put this together, and I love it. It's made with sweet potatoes, avocado, black beans, red onion. It's really simple. It's so easy to make. Did I say it was easy to make? I promise you it is. And okay, I know people don't like to hear this, but it's good for you. It's a nice alternative to a white potato salad. And I've got nothing against white potato salad. I like to make white potato salad. I'll use a vegan mayonnaise, if indeed I even use a mayonnaise, because sometimes I like that kind of tart, mustardy kind of potato salad, which just has mustard and vinegar in it. But the sweet potato black bean salad, the avocado gives it the wonderful creaminess, like a mayonnaise. Frankly, I think it's a genius recipe. Another recipe that I really would love you to try, and there are two versions, actually. It's the fresh fruit tart. One of them is cooked, and one of them is all raw. So in the cooked version, the pie crust is cooked. In the raw version, the crust is made of dried fruits and nuts. But it's spectacular looking. For July 4th, for example, it's red, white, and blue from strawberries and blueberries. And the white part is a creamy cashew custard. It's amazing and so fresh and just what you want for a summer treat. Now, in the cooked version, I use, on top of the crust, it has a dairy-free dark chocolate chip layer, gives you just a thin layer of chocolate. So you have the crust, the thin layer of chocolate, the vanilla custard, and the fresh fruit. It's spectacular. And then I wanted to duplicate the chocolate in the raw version. And I came up with putting raw cacao nibs into the crust. Oh my goodness. It's just so amazing. It's so fantastic. And I serve this a number of times to different people. It's always a major hit. I promise you it's not difficult and it looks spectacular. I hope you will really try this recipe. Another summer treat, summer recipe that I really love, I came up with a couple of years ago. I call them aguas frescas, which is a spin on the sweet drinks that you'll find, sweet tropical fruits. But often in those traditional versions of the aguas frescas, there's a lot of added sugar. And we don't like added sugar, do we? Not when fresh fruit is naturally so sweet. So what I do is I get a number of melons and watermelon. You can use honeydew, cantaloupe, watermelon. Each individual melon I will scoop out and put in a blender and mix it up. And you can add water to it if you want to thin it. You can freeze them and make ice cubes. You can mix them with sparkling water. So you can make, with cantaloupe, for example, a lovely orange sparkling drink. If you use honeydew, which is green inside, or some other melon that has a greenish flesh, you can make a green drink. And then with watermelon, of course, it'll be a lovely red. You can garnish them with sprigs of mint. Or if you make cubes, you can put the cubes in a sparkling water and you get all of these colorful little things floating around in your glass. It's really sensational. And sweet. Sweet without added sugar. That's what's genius about it. And it's so refreshing. And of course, you can mix it with a white wine if you want to get a little alcohol in there, and that also works very nicely. To me, summer and hot weather calls for tropical fruits. I'm a big fan of tropical fruits. I love when I visit Costa Rica, I try and find as many different fruits there that I can. And we're very fortunate now to be able to have so many of these tropical fruits in our own neighborhoods, even though they don't grow here locally. Papaya, mango, there's the avocado too. Avocado grows in Florida and California, but sometimes we get them from other places. I have a papaya avocado salsa. So a standard tomato salsa, fresh tomato salsa, is great in the summer. Tomato, onion, cilantro. But if you want something a little different, you can make a salsa with papaya and avocado and red onion. Super simple, fantastic. It can go great on a salad. You can use it in a dip or just eat it up all on its own. I love it. Another popular item at a barbecue or a picnic is a pasta salad. You may know I'm not a big fan of eating pasta. I do have noodles and pasta maybe a few times a month, not very often. But if I'm going to have a noodle or pasta, I want it with lots of other wonderful superfoods like leafy green vegetables, kale, my favorite. We have a creamy kale pesto recipe made with kale, walnuts, nutritional yeast, a little plant milk, garlic, black pepper, and a little miso. And you blend this up together. It makes fantastic pesto that you can toss with pasta, or you could use whole grains if you like. You can eat it warm, but it's especially nice if you chill it, and then you can bring it to your picnic, your barbecue, and it's really colorful too. That's what I love about it. I love in the summer to have all kinds of colorful foods. I love colorful foods all year long, but this one goes really nice, I think, at a summer event. So maybe kale isn't your thing. You can always substitute another leafy green vegetable in this recipe. But if it's not sounding right to you, I've got another one. It's green also, but it's made with navy beans, avocado, along with the walnuts, yeast, and miso. And you blend all of that together and you get a different kind of really creamy green sauce that you can toss with your pasta or other whole grains for another kind of pasta salad. Looks kind of similar, but the green comes from the avocado. And the navy beans, it's amazing how wonderful white beans can be making a creamy sauce that you flavor with whatever you like. And now that I'm talking about creamy beans, hummus is a very popular item these days. You can find it all year long at different parties. I like to say at least there was hummus. Very often when I'll go to a party that doesn't have vegan options, there's usually hummus, but I'm really particular about my hummus. I don't care for most of the store brand hummus. And why is that? Read your labels. Read what's in hummus. Hummus is the Hebrew or Arabic word for garbanzo bean. And the hummus that we know is a salad made with the garbanzo bean. Traditionally, it's made with olive oil, sesame, tahini, lemon, and salt. And then there are different variations where you can season it with cumin, some other seasonings depending on where it's from. But it's basically just garbanzo beans with some sort of dressing, olive oil, lemon, tahini. And it's fantastic. But the very popular brands today, like Sabra, are made with soybean oil. And sometimes that soybean oil can be genetically modified.
I don't know why anyone would want to add soybean oil and not olive oil to hummus. Well, I do know why, because it's cheaper and I can taste the difference. And then the other thing is, very often most hummuses have preservatives because you want your hummus to last forever, right? No. You want to have the hummus and you want to eat it, just like I was talking about earlier. We don't want food to last forever. We want it to be fresh. We want to consume it and enjoy it and then move on, get more fresh food. So I like to make my own hummus, bottom line. And my favorite kind of hummus is when I add a red bell pepper to it. And the red bell pepper can be roasted or it can be raw. They're both wonderful. You can buy roasted red peppers in a jar. There are a number of organic varieties that I like, but just a plain raw red bell pepper is fantastic too. It gives a wonderful color to the hummus, and I just find it gives it an extra special kick. Hummus is not difficult to make. I really don't know why. If you have a blender, you can make hummus or hummus. And these Middle Eastern dishes, many of them are fantastic for summer events, summer barbecues, summer picnics. And another one that comes to mind is the baba ganoush, which is made from eggplant. I remember when I was working in Israel in 1988, gosh, that was 30 years ago. And I was working with a number of Israeli scientists, and we would travel to our customer site. And after we worked for so many long hours and we were all really hungry, we'd go to a restaurant. We'd try and find a restaurant that was open. And it was always a very solemn moment when the server would put out the hummus, which was the first dish that we'd get. And we'd all kind of wait quietly as someone at the table would try the hummus, and then either he would nod as if, yes, the hummus is good, the meal can continue, or if it wasn't good, well, I was never in a place where it wasn't, but everybody was like waiting to find out, is the hummus okay? But the other thing I remember is seeing these different dishes and dips. And I asked one of my colleagues once, what is this? And he said, whenever you don't know what it is, it's eggplant. And that's what baba ganoush is. So if you take an eggplant and put it in the oven, just put it in the oven. You can put it on a baking sheet, 400 degrees, and you can watch it, but you want the skin to blacken a little bit, char a little bit. And that burnt flavor infuses into the eggplant flesh a little bit. Then you can take it out. Be careful because it's hot. And then cut it open, scoop out the soft flesh inside, and then blend it up with lemon juice and tahini. Or use lime. It's fantastic. Traditional recipes will add olive oil and salt. And you know me, I don't. It doesn't need it. With the tahini is the great fat. And with lime or lemon juice, that gives you, that brings out the flavor. You don't need salt when you're adding lime and lemon juice. At least, I don't think so. And then the last thing that I like to take from the Middle Eastern salad repertoire is the cucumber salad. It's the freshest kind of salad. So wonderful in summer. Fresh tomatoes, fresh cucumbers, chopped in little cubes. And then you add fresh mint, maybe some fresh cilantro, toss it with lemon or lime juice. It's just to live for. So fresh, so spectacular. I highly recommend that. So here are some suggestions that you can bring to your next barbecue, potluck, picnic, 4th of July. It'll be a hit, I promise. Another summer recipe that I love is collard rolls. Okay, collard rolls, that may not sound very appetizing to you, but just give me a minute, okay? Collard leaves are really big and flat. And when you carefully remove the stem in the middle, you can use them like wraps and roll all kinds of wonderful things inside. They're very sturdy. Sometimes it's easier to steam the leaves first. That makes them a little more flexible, a little less chewy, but you can use them either raw or steamed. And I like to put some sort of creamy fat-based item on the leaf first. So that can be a nut butter, peanut butter, almond butter, or I make a sunflower seed cheese. It's simply soaked sunflower seeds that I blend and add some seasonings to. It's really, really nice. And you spread that on the leaf, and then you can add whatever fresh veggies you like, grated carrots, tomatoes, cucumbers. Roll it up, and you have a nice, fun food that you can eat with your hands. You know, I was talking about the Vegetarian House before, and they have a raw collard roll, and they use some sort of coconut cream inside in addition to the fresh vegetables. So you can get really creative with it. And I'm thinking right now, just off the top of my head, that maybe instead of the sunflower seed cheese, I might want to try my almond ricotta. And I want to tell you that the almond ricotta is one of the most amazing recipes I have ever come up with. In fact, it's so amazing, I almost didn't want to share it with anybody. I wanted to keep it to myself, at least me and Gary. But I put it up on the Responsible Eating and Living website, and it would be wonderful in a collard roll. In fact, I think I'm going to have to do that very soon. So the almond ricotta is soaked almonds. I take raw almonds and soak them overnight. And then this is something I like to do. People may think I'm crazy, but it's a zen sort of thing. It's not that time consuming, and it is so worth it. When the almonds are soaked, you can drain them, and then you remove the skins, the peel off of the almonds, the brown part. So you can just simply press them, squeeze them, and the almonds just slip right out. So I put the white almonds in a bowl, and I put the peel, the skin in another bowl, and I quickly separate the two so that I have a bowl of soaked almonds without the skins, all white, off-white in color. I just blend that up. Just add enough water so that it makes a ricotta-like consistency. Now, you can just stop right there. It's fantastic. I mean, it's really amazing. Sometimes I like to add a little miso to it. I like South River chickpea miso. It's light in color, and it blends very nice, and it gives it a little salty kick. You know, I don't like adding salt, and miso has a lot of salt in it, but I like to use miso, and it gives it a little extra probiotic and cheesy flavor. So the almond ricotta, either plain or with the miso, it's just amazing, really amazing. And if you're craving cheese and wondering how to give up dairy, this is something really simple and really satisfying. We put it on everything. You can look at my most recent What Vegans Eat post. We just made up a batch and have been putting a dollop on our morning cereal. This batch doesn't have miso in it, so it's just plain almonds, but it's amazing. In fact, I like the soaked almond better than the dried almond. It's got more crunch, it's juicy, it's so good, and it's much better for you. It's easier to digest. So soak your nuts, folks. Soak your nuts. Soak your seeds. Soak them. Another wonderful summer recipe is ratatouille. Ratatouille, it's French. And a wonderful summer recipe served cold. Now, ratatouille can be served hot or cold, but it's lovely cold. And it's made from eggplant and zucchini and bell peppers and tomatoes. My favorite's herb mix, Herbe de Provence, which is a combination of basil, parsley, rosemary, thyme, oregano. There are different mixes of Herbes de Provence, and you could use your own. And if you have a garden and you've got tons of zucchini, this is a great dish to make. It's so lovely on a hot summer night. All of these recipes I've been talking about so far are made with whole plant foods, minimally processed plant foods, and they're good for you. Even that strawberry tart I was talking about before, especially the raw one, that's just whole, minimally processed plant foods. It's good for you. I have another recipe that I want to talk about, which is kind of decadent and maybe, well, it's not the most health promoting, but it's a treat and it's fun. And I think it's worth making once a year, especially at these summer events. Who doesn't love s'mores? So we have a s'mores recipe where it starts with making your own gluten-free graham cracker squares. Now, graham crackers are wheat-based. Graham is from the name of the graham flour, which is a wheat flour. But you can make it with gluten-free ingredients, and it has that same texture and flavor and consistency as a graham cracker. It's really fun. And I have yet to see a graham cracker offered in the stores that is 100% vegan, even if it's wheat-based. They all have honey in them. I have yet to see. Have you seen a graham cracker that doesn't have honey in it? So this recipe is not only gluten-free, but it's vegan. It has no honey, and it's fantastic. And you pair that with your favorite dark chocolate bar and your favorite vegan marshmallows like Dandy's. Trader Joe's has a vegan marshmallow. I'm sure there's a few other brands out there, and you can create a traditional summer treat. I'll confess that s'mores are probably a little too sweet for me at this point because I've really eliminated the refined sugar in my diet. But for those of you who want to have something decadent like that and you don't want to miss out on traditional summer treats, I created this for you. Now, there are lots of other desserts that you can make that don't require refined sugar and are good for you and still taste luscious and creamy and rich and sweet and decadent. What comes to mind are the different frozen soft serve desserts that you can make. We have a number of them at Responsible Eating and Living. One of my favorites is taking oranges, peeling them, slicing them, sectioning them. So you remove the skin and you separate the sections and you freeze the sections. You can do as many oranges as you want. And then when you're ready, you blend the sections with cashews. That's really just about it. You can add a little vanilla extract. It tastes like a creamsicle. It's the simplest thing and it's wonderful. We also have a number of other frozen fruit-based frozen desserts that are quite good. But I want to highlight my frozen cookies. They're raw. They look like Oreos. And they're frozen. So if you want to bring them to a summer event, you have to be able to keep them cool until it's ready to eat, but they're worth it. I have the lemon cheesecake frozen cookies. And what I do is I use pitted prunes blended with some flavors to make the dough for the cookies. And then a nice cashew cream that either has lemon or vanilla in it. I have another frozen cookie recipe that's a vanilla cream oatmeal cookie, and I add some oats to the prune batter to make the cookie and then flavor the cashews with vanilla, and that's a vanilla oatmeal cookie. They're both amazing and they're great summer treats. If you're a cookie lover, you'll love these cookies. And I know that I was just focusing on the sweet treats. I want to go back just really quickly before we end and talk about some slaws, because at these barbecues and picnics, you have to have a slaw, a cabbage base, a shredded cabbage salad. I particularly like red cabbage, and we have two on the Responsible Eating and Living website. There's a slaw with pineapple. I call it the, how did this Costa Rican pineapple get in my New York City slaw? That's a fun recipe. And the creaminess comes from sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, and sesame seeds. And then the other red cabbage salad is so simple and amazing. It has lemon and mint as a dressing. The dressing is lemon, mint, and a date blended together and tossed with red cabbage. So fresh. And these cabbage salads, they travel so well because they don't wilt. So those are my slaws. So I hope I've given you some food for thought, some wonderful recipe items for upcoming barbecues, for Independence Day, whatever you're celebrating, we've got you covered. Just visit responsibleeatingandliving.com, and on the sidebar, you'll see the recipe index. Scroll down to summer, and you'll see all of the recipes that I just spoke about. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you a great summer with some great summer food. Have a delicious week. Thank you.